Hey, Adam, how's it going?
Good. How you doing?
Good, man.
What are you doing this time of year? Like, how much film are you watching right now? Or is all your film study already done?
No, I'm going back over, guys, in detail. So I watched a bunch of games, and now I'm kind of going back over individual skill sets and watching other games as well. So probably two or three games to rehash each prospect, but also going over basically all their offensive possessions, all their defensive possessions.
Broadly speaking, how much does your opinion change on guys from, like, January till now? Is there, like, subtle movement? Maybe you had a guy 7th, now he's 11th, or are there some guys that, like, really fall?
I wouldn't say considerably. I think everybody's generally in the same range. Like, I've had Luka Doncic and Jaren Jackson Jr. as the top two guys for 3 months. Those guys won't change, but there could be some fluctuations, could be some variance in like the 3 to maybe 8 range. That depends more on like what I think going back and watching guys over.
And how many prospects do you have? I know on the Stepien there's some of those that have like the top 100 ranked. Do you do like the top 100 prospects, or after a certain number you kind of just don't care anymore?
I think typically, or at least in the past, I was that latter. I just didn't care anymore after like 30 maybe. But this year, I think I've gone to 100 or so. I don't feel like great. You know, I don't have a lot of conviction when you get into like 60 to 100. That range is kind of just, I just group them all together and it's whatever. But yeah, I usually go over about 100 guys.
Man, it's a crapshoot, I think. The draft is a crapshoot in general. Like, you know, educated guesses. But once you get to like 45, come on, man. Like, some of these guys, I just feel like you can really have educated guesses on, and I do think there's guys that stick out, but there's just so many variables. Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of Locked On NBA Network. I'm, of course, your host, Adam Matas, from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. You can check us out and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And I am joined today by one of, if not the best draft mind out there, at least one of my favorites, Cole Zwicker, the co-founder of The Stepien and contributor at The Step Back. And I'm excited to talk to you, Cole. We did this last year, I believe, and you told me Lonzo Ball sucks.
and then ended up breaking in number 3. People forget that.
That's true. You just were slightly lower on him than others, but... what did you think of this year's rookie class? Like, what surprised you the most by this year's rookies?
I mean, how productive all of them were. I guess it wasn't surprising because that was always the allure for me, was the depth of guys who look like they would contribute right away. I just think there's a lot of very solid players. The most surprising thing for me was obviously the two guys that look like two-way players but didn't have like definitive skills, like very plus-plus skills in college, via Jason Tatum, Donovan Mitchell. The rapid improvement and growth that they've both incurred, already looking like top 40 guys, arguably, is just ridiculous. So that's the part that, I guess, surprised me. But the fact they're contributing didn't really surprise me.
You were high on both guys. But, yeah, the fact that they both were, like, best player on playoff teams for certain games is
not high enough, man. Definitely not high enough.
It's still kind of crazy to think. I love this draft class, though. I really do think it's an all-timer, and some of the guys that looked okay this year I think are actually good. They're just, you know, sometimes it takes a little bit of time. But I want to start this show by you had a great column on the Stepien yesterday that I really, really like. Just reread it just now again to kind of be ready for this. And it was on two things, I think. It was on big versatility, which is like the primary subject, and how to evaluate bigs, you know, kind of going forward. But it was also just on the idea of evaluating the trends in the league going forward and how much, you know, I've been big on saying the playoffs are the breeding ground for the next evolution of the game. And that's where we really start to see the new trends. You kind of question that a little bit and say, yeah, those are trends. But when approaching a draft prospect that you might have for 7-8 years, it might be a short trend instead of a long one.
Well, first of all, I apologize that you had to reread that column. I think it was like a 30-minute read, so my fault there.
But it was a long one.
But as far as trends, I just think it's very hard to dictate and predict the future because things can change, you know, very quickly. Right now, I think it's kind of an outlier circumstance. We have, again, the star caliber perimeter talent we have in the league right now is unbelievable. Like LeBron, Kevin Durant, Stephen Curry, James Harden, those guys are all-time players. They are all-time offensive players. They dictate the way the league is played overall, because the best players always determine how the league is played. It's an amorphous league. They adapt to their top level talent. And you look forward and you look at the next generation, a lot of those guys are bigs. One of them being Denver Nuggets, Nikola Jokic is in there, Karl Towns, Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, Giannis Antetokounmpo. Those latter two guys can be a primary ball handler, but those guys aren't pull-up threats, and that it changes the trajectory of the floor. So for me, it's a very difficult calculus to rank a draft prospect based on trends, because it's hard to anticipate unless you are the Cavs or something and you know LeBron's staying and you know what kind of player it takes to win right now. Then I think that has to factor in, because you need the players that can play in the playoffs, like a Miles Bridges, Mikal Bridges, those kinds of players. But like 7 years down the road, we could be looking at the best point guard in the league not even being a dynamic pull-up threat, and that just changes the entire trajectory of how you play those guys at the highest levels.
Do you think that's really a realistic thing, though? Because I think there's, in this regard, I think there's something, some trends that I feel pretty confident going forward are going to continue, of course, and you mentioned these in the article, by the way, but the value of shooting, again, your article is mostly about the big man, but I just think shooting is going to improve over time, in part because it's something everybody works on now, and the value of it, you know, players kind of try to develop the skill that'll get them paid, and that's such a big one. Shooting, and that includes pull-up shooting, and then just kind of this versatility at all five spots. I think those things, to me, I don't see going away.
I totally agree with you. I think those things are principled in. I mean, the way the league is as far as rules, they favor perimeter play. They favor, you know, drive and kick kind of basketball. I don't see spacing and pace going away. I think that that's here to stay. You're not going to see like late 90s, early 2000s playing through the post anymore. I'm not sure if you can win that way. You need perimeter oriented bigs, in my opinion, that can, you know, shoot. You want to get people want to play five out basketball. Yeah. That's not going away. I just don't know how severely to factor that in. I do agree with you that those trends are here to stay, but does that mean you don't draft a Trae Young, even though he's dynamic as a pull-up shooter? He's one of the best creative passers I've seen for his age, but we've seen small point guards. They get headhunted in the playoffs. They get destroyed. Right. That's like the entire game plan. So how much does that factor into your analysis taking a guy like that? Because right now, if he were to encounter LeBron James in a playoff series, LeBron's going to kill him. And does that matter in 7 years when there's no LeBron? You know what I mean? It's tough.
I think with Trae Young, my Trae Young take, I'm kind of low on him, and I love his game. Like I everything about his game, I love, except for the fact that he's the height of JJ Barea. And I do just think, for me, it does seem like there's just a cap on how good he could be in it, because at some point, and that point might be a conference finals. You know, he might be able to beat like 26 of the 30 teams, but I just feel like some team's going to be able to go, okay, that guy has to guard this 6'10" guy, and it's never going to work. But I did want to talk about the article in terms of the big versatility. As I'm reading through, you kind of make a checklist of things that are important, because I think everybody talks about spacing as a shot, and a versatile five is a five that can shoot the ball. But you outline a lot more, and as I'm reading through it, they're all things that I think Nikola Jokic is like ranked number one at in the NBA in terms of big, which is, you know, passing, shooting from outside. Maybe he's not number one at shooting, but he's certainly up there. And then being able to put the ball on the floor and being able to make quick decisions. I think that, to me, if you ranked his top four skills, those would be his top four skills.
Exactly. And I think Nikola has all of those qualities. And I also noted the importance of posting up, too. Like, you have to have that at least as a secondary option. I don't think you can run your offense through it. We saw kind of the negatives with that with Joel Embiid against the Celtics. And I know it's only one series, but Embiid is kind of an outlier physically in the league. I mean, he's gargantuan. He's a lineup dictator, and he couldn't get it done. But I always
think with him that he has the talent to do it. He just doesn't have the like decision. He doesn't have the feel yet for the game. And I worry.
Exactly.
I worry sometimes with who he's working out with. I know Drew Hanlon is a guy that gets people paid, but I think he teaches the Kobe method, I think, a little much. And I think with Joel, he's so good. His footwork's already so good. Now he just needs to learn when to use it and when not to.
That's an astute point. That was my next point, right? Is like Nikola Jokic has the decision making. I think that he's one big that I would trust to run an offense through. And he has those qualities as far as putting the ball on the floor, attacking closeouts. We just see how valuable a center is that can not only space the floor. Like, I think Channing Frye is not going to fare as well in this modern age, because you can just switch actions with him, right? He can't post up. He's not going to take you off the dribble. But guys who can, like Al Horford in the playoffs has been ridiculous, because he can dribble, pass, and shoot. And if you can put pressure on the defense and bend the defense that way, if you can have five guys on the floor that can attack closeouts, that becomes really, really hard to deal with.
Al Horford looks like the best. I know this is the dumbest phrase in basketball. He looks like the best all-around center in the game. And I know some of this has to do with just the team that he's on and the role he's playing, but he does everything you need to do in the modern NBA on both ends of the floor.
Exactly right. And I think there's some people view that negatively almost as like a prospect who has a bunch of skills, but not really one established skill, even though you can argue definitely Al Horford's quick decision making. That's a very established skill. He can handle the ball. His coordination is up there at least. But I think that's kind of the theme in the modern game is it's not so much about like high end strengths for a lot of guys. It's more about having no weaknesses and just being good at a bunch of different things. It's all about versatility to me.
Yeah, for sure. So with that in mind, there's a lot of bigs in this draft, and bigs, there's not a lot of centers. I guess there's a couple centers, but there's a lot of just like power forward and small ball centers in here. And as I'm going through the list, there's two guys you are very, it would seem, very low on relative to most, or maybe just relative to their impact at the college level. And that's Robert Williams and Mitchell Robinson. And those are two guys that are kind of slated in that, you know, 10 to 20 range that Denver's going to be in.
Yeah, it's tough because I think Robert Williams does have qualities that are conducive to the modern game. He's a pretty damn good passer on short rolls. He makes relatively quick decisions, and he's definitely a dynamic lob threat. Great athlete. I mean, when he's engaged, like he can move in space defensively. He answers a lot of the two-way versatility, kind of can play in space defensively questions. It's just he doesn't shoot the ball. I mean, his shot regressed this year, even from his freshman year, which wasn't great. And he doesn't really handle the ball that well. So, I mean, you see him as kind of maybe a Clint Capela role. The same with Mitchell Robinson. We don't know a lot about him, obviously, because he didn't play college basketball. And he has some issues with his maturity, apparently. But he, again, he's more of like a rim-running big. He's more of like a pick-and-roll dive guy. You see some highlights. You see highlights of a bunch of bigs like this at lower levels. That they'll be dribbling the ball and they're shooting. But you're like, do you really want them to be doing that at the NBA level? I mean, it doesn't look real. So they're both more play-finishing kind of bigs.
Yeah. What about this one? Best player available. When you're picking at 14, what's the approach with best player available versus best fit? I mean, obviously, if you're in like the 1 through 3, 4, 5 range, that's an easier decision. You're going to take the upside. But at 14, what would your strategy be there if you were running a team?
I think it's just best player available still, especially in a draft like this. I mean, with the Nuggets too, there's not really a clear-cut fit to me in that range that's like pops off the screen. Let's say last draft and somehow Jonathan Isaac fell to the Nuggets. That's an obvious
fit.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's exactly the kind of player they need. But in this class, I don't really see that same level of guy. There was a forward out of Virginia, DeAndre Hunter, who I was pretty high on. And he's a kind of a bigger combo wing that guys that are hard to find. I think that would have been a clearer fit. But a guy like Miles Bridges, if he falls to 14, that's an automatic, like, you just run up to the podium.
See, but he's not going to fall, right? You have him, I think, 9th on your board. He's going to be a guy that goes in the top 10, or do you think there'll be some surprises?
Yeah, I think there's like a 20% chance he falls to 14, maybe even less than that. But I do think it's possible. I don't think he's a surefire top 10 guy. It's going to be hard for him to get past the Hornets at 11 just because they love production. And that's someone who's produced both years. But it's not unfathomable. I look at some of these guys. One of the guys is going to fall. Maybe that's Wendell Carter. Maybe that's Miles Bridges. But somebody's going to fall a little bit farther than they should. And maybe the Nuggets can even move up a couple spots to one of the Clippers picks to get him there.
Michael Bridges is the guy, or is it Michael or McCall? How do you say it? Or how have you heard said?
McHale. Yeah.
McHale Bridges. Okay. So McHale Bridges, he's the guy that I think, everything I keep hearing from people is that he's the guy it seems like everybody's secretly not that excited about.
Yeah, he's older, so he's getting a lot of pushback with that because he's already pretty developed as far as he's still underweight and he still lacks strength, but he's added a ton of muscle already. Like, he redshirted his freshman year, and he's a worker, man. But he's already improved his body, basically almost maxing it out, and he doesn't have a ton of ball skills, but I think he's actually being overly criticized. This is a 6'7 wing, 7'2 wingspan who really knows how to play team defense. He's a pretty smart defensive player, and then offensively, he can shoot off movement now, and that's the number one thing for wings, that if you can't shoot off movement, that just limits the amount of sets you can partake in. And he can come off a down screen. He can come off floppy actions. He can set his feet quickly on the move. Not so much off the dribble yet, but he has a really, really high release point, like a special release point at the top of his head, like way above his head. So it's he's a productive player. I think he's probably getting overly criticized right now.
This always happens too, right? There's a guy, because I think, you know, in the tournament, he was rising up draft boards. And then it's like, let's criticize him for all these other things. And then at the end, they go back to where they always started and maybe that's appropriate for him. I wonder, this is a good question for him, and we're kind of, one of the topics of the playoffs has been, are the Celtics good or is Brad Stevens making them look good? And I think it's a stupid conversation. Like, that conversation is had usually in a really dumb fashion. But I think with McHale Bridges, one of the things I wonder is, does he get credit for playing in such a smart system? and with a smart coach and smart teammates, or does he get penalized for that? And maybe he's actually just kind of, you know, he'll look less good once he gets to the NBA. What's your take?
It's a fascinating question. I lean towards it's a positive. I like college guys that play for good coaches because they learn they learn things other guys don't. Like Mikal Bridges, his footwork and everything. Like Villanova is the best footwork coach team in the country as far as jump stops. Everything they do is just really fundamental. Yeah. So I like that from those guys. But yeah, I mean the system, their four out one in kind of motion type system is going to make guys look better. But also it didn't give Mikal a lot of creation situations. Like he mostly played off the ball, like ceding possessions to Josh Hart last season, Dante DiVincenzo, Jalen Brunson. Those guys are like the high volume creators. So in another system, you might be able to see more of what he can do offensively, even though the flashes aren't super promising. But again, I think that maybe the efficiency numbers are spiked because of the system for sure.
Right. And with guys, see, when I always think with Nikola Jokic, the smarter players you can give him, the better, because the intelligence side of it and just knowing when to slip screens and when to hit, when to find openings, when to stay out of the way. To me, that's Jokic is going to create easy looks for everybody as long as you don't screw it up. And so players that know how not to screw things up, they jump up the board for me. You've got a guy I'm really interested in and really curious to see where he goes is Jontay Porter. Because when I watch, I know it's not fair to judge Michael Porter Jr. off of what we saw. So I'm going to throw it out. But when I watch Jontay Porter, just even the idea of him, I think, excites me a little bit more than Michael Porter based on just how horrible Michael Porter looked. But what do you think of Jontay Porter?
I'm intrigued. I'm a fan of him. I have him in the top 12. He's obviously out of shape right now. He was at the highest body percent at the combine. Like, he's out of shape for sure. He's really young. He's the youngest big in the class. So maybe some immaturity issues there. But his skill set is the most tailor-made, I think, of all the bigs for the modern game offensively. Like, he's the best ball handler. He's kind of a 0.5 there. He actually has dribble moves. He can shoot a little bit off the bounce. But, you know, high-level, quick decision-making passer. Some guys have said he kind of reminds them of Nikola Jokic. Like, that whole...
Right.
I guess the whole aura coming into the draft of being kind of out of shape, but being super skilled and really smart. So he has that. He has that going for him.
Every fat player is going to get compared to Jokic now. Great.
Oh, yes. Marc Gasol, Jokic. You get Draymond Green's another one. That's another high IQ guy that was out of shape. They got in shape. But that's kind of the allure with Jontay is he's a super quick decision maker, you know, great passer. He's got the best shooting mechanics of any big in the class to me, and he can dribble. So he can dribble, pass, shoot, and he's a smart player. Like, he knows where to be. Team defense wise, people knock him because of his lateral agility and the fact he can't jump. He definitely can't jump, but he is pretty good as far as actually quickness. He's not bad there. So I think there's some athletic upside. If you buy that, I think he's going to be a draft steal. If he goes second round, if he goes late first round, we've seen over time, those are the kinds of guys who get devalued. And because they're so smart, because they're so skilled, they return heavy investment there.
Can he play the four alongside Jokic, do you think?
Oh, man, that's a great question. I don't know if you can survive that defensively, but offensively, does it matter? Like, you're guaranteeing yourself a high-level offense if you have two guys as smart as that who can both space the floor. But I don't know, man. That gets kind of tenuous. And like the playoffs, for example, if we're talking about versatility, I don't know if that's the move.
Well, I'll tell you, and I think you're right about thinking playoffs here. Offensively, I like having as many high IQ players and as many passers. I think D'Antoni had a really interesting quote in training camp this year where he said, if I had a team of 5 point guards, I'd be happy, or something like that. So and I think there's some truth to that. If you have five guys that have a point guard's mind, obviously they have to have different bodies and skill sets or whatever, but if you have five guys with a point guard's mind, I just feel like the offense will hum. And offensively, I feel like maybe there's something that could work. Defensively, he's not the same as Paul Millsap, but Millsap really makes up for a lot of – he really protects the rim behind Jokic without being athletic, because Millsap can't jump either, but he just, his instincts and his reaction time on defense is just so fast.
Exactly. You're hitting on all the things that I like to harp on with prospects: reaction time, intelligence. I think that the league is getting more skill, IQ ball oriented, and it still seems like people can't get off that athleticism hill. Right. They just want to die on it. But it's so important to have smart players in the modern game that are versatile and have high IQ and react quickly. I totally agree.
Well, especially watching this conference finals on each side, you know, each game has to be played a little bit differently, and the adjustments the coaches have to make. There's a lot of pressure on the coaches to make the right adjustments, but players have to be smart enough to understand it as well in a way. I always crack up when people say, you know, we don't present analytics to our players because it'll confuse them. I think at some point in the future, it's not going to be – I think players, part of what will make them great is their ability to filter out the information they need. And maybe this is a little bit more of a pipe dream, you know, for maybe your upper echelon players, but – when you go into a game one is played one way, game two is played another way, game three, whatever, you need to have a lot of guys that kind of understand the, what's happening on the court and the different ways to take advantage of it. So I envision a future. This is an evolution I anticipate in the next 5 to 10 years of the intelligence just being so highly valued. But maybe that's wishful thinking.
No, I agree with you. I think like a guy like Mohamed Bamba didn't really pop in dynamic fashion at Texas because it was one, it was a horrible situation for him. He had no spacing and he's just so underdeveloped physically. But that guy, if you've heard him talk, he is brilliant. He's a really, really smart guy. I think that he has a ton of upside because he's so damn smart. He's going to pick up on things quickly.
He's another guy working out with Drew Hanlon on three dribble step back moves. Whenever I see 7 foot guys working on these things, I'm like, the perimeter skills are important, and maybe that helps you become a better like DHO player and decision maker. But I just hope he's not pulling out, you know, 18-foot step back one legged shots too often right out the gate. Who else do you like in this middle round? And is there anybody in particular for Denver you really like?
I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is really interesting in this range. I mean, Denver's hard because their backcourt is so well established with Gary Harris, Jamal Murray. What they need is more like 3-4s, and I think that's probably the weakness of this class. A guy like Kevin Knox, you see him mocked to Denver a lot. I'm not a huge fan. I don't see the feel elements. He's kind of Trey Lyles-esque to me, but with less feel. He can play the four, though. Like I think he's big enough. He has a great frame. He's a great projectable shot. I mean, I don't know if he's going to be a high-level shooter, but he at least has the mechanics to improve there. So there's just not a lot of guys who really fit that mold. Like Troy Brown I like a lot, versatile wing. I think I would probably take him above all of those guys. The shot is not certain, though. He has no shot diversity as far as off movement yet. He hasn't refined his mechanics, even though we saw some leaked videos with agents, and who knows if that's even real because the Draft Express guys aren't going to post bad video of prospects because they get in there to hype them up.
Right.
So we don't know exactly what it is yet, but I mean, Troy Brown has a lot. He's multifaceted. He can dribble, pass, and shoot for sure. He was a point guard in high school, so he has those kind of ball skills that you look for.
6'7", so yeah, he can play. I mean, is he a guy that can guard, that can switch out on the perimeter? I mean, if he gets switched out onto Chris Paul, is he falling over, or is he sticking with him?
He's got pretty good feet. He's not ultra quick. He's not quick twitch. That athleticism is his main knock, but I think that's mostly vertical athleticism. He uses his feet well on the perimeter. He tries on defense for sure. Like his motor's pretty good on that end. I want to say his team defense depreciated over the course of the season, but Oregon was another bad situation. But I've seen him play at lower levels. I saw him play at the Hoop Summit. He definitely takes pride in his defense, and he has the frame, and I think he has the feet to at least be relatively switchable.
Okay, interesting. Anybody else that you feel is kind of a sneaky later in the first round of the draft? Because I have a feeling Denver is a trade candidate. The thing that if they didn't trade their pick last year, I think they would have like be a surefire trade candidate. I think maybe a little gun shy because of how that worked out this year. But if they were to trade back, is there anybody in the back half of the draft you like?
Yeah, I like Jacob Evans. He's a wing out of Cincinnati, measured in just under 6'6", but he's a really, really high IQ team defender. And then offensively, he can dribble and he can definitely pass. He doesn't really apply his handle to actually scoring. He's not very well versed as a scorer, but he has that one motion release that I really like from three. I think it's a pretty safe bet to shoot NBA threes, and he's really smart, versatile wing. He's not great as an on-ball defender. He's pretty good. He mirrors well, but he's not ultra quick twitch. But him out of Cincinnati, my favorite guy out of all of these is D'Anthony Melton from USC. A lot of guys probably aren't familiar with him because he didn't play this last year due to the FBI investigation or whatnot, but he played his freshman year. I think he's a good kid. I think he's got absolutely hosed in this situation.
Well, yeah, I never think about the players in these situations. I think about the ridiculous system, but yeah.
Exactly. So I mean, he's 6'3 with like a 6'9 wingspan. He played at the combine. He played 5-on-5s. Maybe the most high instincts defensive guard that we've seen come around, like even better than Marcus Smart there, which is crazy to say, but he's not as big and he's not as girthy. But if he shoots and he shows, he's working with Hanlon too. So if he shows progression, he showed a little bit of progression on his mechanics. Again, Denver has an established backcourt, but if you're just looking for best player available trading back, I think that D'Anthony Melton can be a top 14, even a top 10 guy in this class if he shoots the ball because his defense is that good and he just really knows how to play. His instincts are off the charts.
I like it. What do you think of this Denver team building around Murray, Harris, and Jokic? I know it's early, and all these guys can really change their games in ways over the next couple of years. But as sort of the first three guys in a building, as your building blocks, what do you think of them?
I mean, I have a little bit of consternation about Murray and Jokic is like a pick and roll defensive combo overall, but I think that they're workable. Like, the thing with Murray is that he's gotten more athletic and he's bigger. Like, he's not a small guard. He's 6'4". He's got legit size. So in the playoffs, I'm not saying he's a high level defender, but I don't think he's going to be headhunted to the same extent as some of these smaller guards are. You just need, I mean, the hardest things to find in the modern game are like 3-4 kind of combo defenders. Like, I don't hate to bring it up, but like an OG Anunoby.
Right.
Like, those guys are hard to find. And that's why I like DeAndre Hunter so much there. I had him mocked there pretty much all season, and then unfortunately he went back to school, but there's just not a lot of guys who do that stuff. So if they can find the infrastructure to fill in the 3 and the 4, and you can really have that kind of defensive versatility around Jokic, and these guys are intelligent players where Jokic can pick them out on cuts, like you were talking about, like slip cuts off the ball, that kind of thing, I'm a fan. I think that they have the infrastructure to be an awesome offense because Jokic is that damn good. It just comes down to defensively, how much better can they get on that end? Can they acquire the personnel that allows them to do that?
I'm giving him one more year to kind of see for the defensive stuff, because I think offensively there's no question those three are going to be awesome, but defensively is a real thing, and I'm going to give him one more year. Murray, you say, has size. I actually think he's just kind of small. I don't know how to describe it. He's 6'5", so he's got length. He's just kind of small, and I don't know if that's because he still kind of has a kid body. Last year he wasn't able to work out the entire summer because of the hernia surgery. So I don't know if he goes in the gym this summer and puts on 10 pounds and what that looks like and if his body can handle it. But he just seems to me to have the kind of Steph Curry build where no matter how tall he is, he just looks small.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, you've obviously seen 100 times as much Denver Nuggets basketball as me, right. But at least he's not like outlier small. He's not like Trae Young where he's going to get like absolutely like posted up, and he is at least big enough to where he doesn't have to be a liability. And he also tries really hard too. That's the best thing about Jamal, I think, overall, is at least from what I've seen as a prospect and in the NBA, like he'll give effort on that end.
One of my favorite guys in the second round, Denver's got, what, 43 and 58, I believe. One of my favorite players, if they don't go point guard in the first round, which I don't think they will, I kind of like Javon Carter. And I know he's small too, but I just think he's a guy that could be a really good, like you hope for him to be able to be an NBA level defender.
Yeah, he's a bulldog. I mean, he's fun to listen to talk. He had a broadcast at the combine. He's a man of very little words. So when he describes things, he's basically like, I was doing the same thing I did at West Virginia for 4 years. That's like his only answer. Like, he'll get into your body. Like, he's super aggressive. He's a less athletic version of Patrick Beverley, I think. He has the established frame. And I think
stronger.
He's
stronger. He looks like, I mean, like you said, a bulldog, man.
Yeah, he's definitely stronger, but he's not quite as quick twitch. He gets beat a little bit. Like, Trae Young pretty much got by him at will when they played this past season. Yeah. But I think on the Nuggets, that's a really nice fit because they run so much of their offense through Nikola Jokic, and he's not a point guard. That's the thing about Javon is he's more of like a small two guard. And that's why Patrick Beverley worked so well next to Harden, of course, because he didn't have to handle that responsibility. But that'd be kind of interesting.
Yeah. I mean, the second round, you're always kind of – the odds aren't great there, but I feel like I've watched him in college for 15 years. He's a guy that I think I feel like for some reason he was in the tournament back when I was in high school. All right, let's finish out by the top of this draft. It doesn't pertain to Denver, but I'm always curious to hear what you think of the top, you know, seven guys or so. You've got Luka Doncic in a tier all his own.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of him. I mean, just what we just talked about is if you can get your playmaking initiation in the playoffs from a bigger player, then you don't have to sacrifice that trade-off of having a smaller guard on the floor.
Right.
And Luka at 6'8", I've never seen anybody that can play pick and roll like him. I mean, his handle is elite. Everybody wants to give him crap because he's not super athletic, which I get, but Joe Johnson wasn't super athletic either, and they have the similar body type, similar handle. I think you can survive in pick and roll, you can survive as a creator when you can shoot off the dribble and you can use your body to create separation, but every team needs a high level decision maker at the top or upper echelon levels to win. That's the hardest thing to get is a playmaker who can make the right play, and that's him in this draft to me. Like, I don't understand how he's sometimes considered like the fourth overall prospect or whatnot. Like, guys like this never come around. Like, how many guys that are 6'8" do you have to chase over the top and pick and roll? Like,
right.
They just don't come around.
I wonder if that'll be a trend though going forward, because like you said, the height thing is so important. I really do think you've got to have like just a bunch of 6'6" guys are taller. I think going forward, it's just going to be a thing that has to happen. And the easiest way to do that is to have your point guard actually be a point forward and then just have two shooting guards, because I think you could find more 6'6" shooting guards than you can 6'6" point guards.
I'm with you.
But maybe, I mean, who knows if those guys will kind of come through the marks. I wonder if Carmelo Anthony was a 10-year-old right now coming through the ranks, if he was working a little bit more to be like LeBron than, you know, to be an isolation jab step scorer. But that's neither here nor there. Your top two, I think, are the same as mine, because second, you have Jaren Jackson, who I look at these other guys, and I'm just a little bit lower. I'm not super low on him, but I'm a little bit lower than most. Jaren Jackson, I'm very high on.
He's a lot of fun. He's really good. I mean, he's exactly what you want, I think, from a modern big outside of the quick decision making. That's the one thing that he doesn't bring that like a Wendell Carter brings. Yeah. But he can play in space defensively. His rim protection instincts, his team defense help instincts are off the charts. I've never seen anything like it from a big. I didn't watch Anthony Davis closely as a prospect. I wasn't really getting into prospects then. But he kind of reminds me of Anthony Davis on the defensive end with that ability. He's not the offensive player. Doesn't have the same level of pop. But he can shoot the three. His ball handling coordination is way underrated. Like, he can put the ball between his legs in a face-up situation and blow past bigs. There's a lot to like there, and I think that he's really safe. He's also the youngest big out of the elites in the class, and he's improved a lot. He's improved so much since high school. I saw him play high school last year. He looked kind of like a plotter. He didn't have that established frame yet. And then fast forward to Michigan State his freshman year, he looks completely different. He's more athletic, and his instincts, again, are just really, really high.
He's my second favorite player in this draft. I like Doncic, too. I'm a little lower on Doncic than I thought I would be. Like, the accolades, everything that he's done and what he's accomplished, like, cannot be overstated. So great. When I watch him, I just think a little slow. But again, like you said, he's 6'8", so he can afford to be a little slow. But I don't doubt he's the best prospect. I just hear some people say best since Anthony Davis, and
yeah.
I don't know if I'd go that far. Wendell Carter's my next favorite player. He's fourth on your board, but to me, him and Jaren Jackson, to me, they both sort of fit the profile of what you need from that spot a little bit more. What are you thinking with him?
I love that guy. I mean, we talked about the value of being versatile. He can do everything offensively. He can shoot. His form mechanically is really sound. He didn't get to play on the perimeter a ton at Duke just because Marvin Bagley and they were kind of juggling those two guys. Yeah. But he can put the ball on the floor. He's an incredibly good quick decision maker. Like, he can make reads on the move. He gets Al Horford comps, and I think a lot of that is actually legit. He's a much better shooter than Horford was as a freshman, even Horford as a junior. But I'm not sure if he's quite as agile in space, even though I do think that his space defense is underrated. I think he's actually relatively quick, and it's a high bar for like a pure switch big in the modern game. Like, how many guys are actually pure switch bigs? It's tough. I think he can move well enough to hang, and he's got a 7'4.5" wingspan, so he has some length to contest if he can stay close enough to the play. I love him though, man. I'm with you. He's purely on my liking, he is my second favorite big prospect in this class.
Behind Jaren Jackson?
Correct.
So you got to sell me on Trae Young, because we'll end with this one, but you got him number three. And I mean, I loved watching him. He's such a great passer. He's got such a great shooter. He's got a great feel. The guy is just so tiny.
Yeah, I mean, I had that ranking up before the playoffs, I think, for the most part. And watching the playoffs, I have my more reservations. I'm probably going to move him down a tier just in that big lump of where I have everybody else that's not named Luka and not named Jaren. I think those are the two big-time prospects.
Yeah.
But Trae, I mean, God, he's just so good, though. Like, he's so good. It's hard to move him down that much because, like, based on best basketball player ability, like, he might be second in the class. He might be third. I mean, he's second or third for me. Like, he's does everything you want offensively. He's one of the best pull-up shooters we've seen come into the league. He's got 30-foot range. And the thing about him is his shooting is undersold because everything he did was hard. It was all pull-ups off the
jump.
It's all contested. He had very few spot-ups. I think he was on unguarded catch-and-shoot threes in the half court. He was 14 of 19. He's basically knocked down. Like, if you give him any kind of avenue, he's going to shoot. It's just, again, the defense, man. I think he's better defensively than he showed. He didn't want to foul this year, so most of his stuff was off ball. They were trying to hide him, and he was pulling these crazy switches off ball to stay away from the action, because if they fouled, their offense just went in the tank. But he's not going to be a plus. I mean, he's going to be a minus. It's just how big of a minus. Is he Isaiah Thomas, which is basically unplayable in the playoffs, or is he respectable? Is he a 6'1", almost 6'2", guy who can hold up a little bit? Does he fight like Stephen Curry, even though he's smaller? Those are the questions. But I think on pure basketball talent, it's hard for me to drop him that far. He's just so damn good.
Is there a spot you want to see him go?
That's a great question. I mean, Philadelphia would be awesome because they have the bigs to really they have the bigs to insulate him, and they could just be like, yeah, you can blow past Trae Young, and then we'll have Embiid, Simmons, and we'll have Covington waiting for you.
Right.
So that'd be ideal, but I don't see him fall all the way to 10.
Yeah.
I think the lowest he goes is probably 9 to the Knicks.
Ugh. I'm not excited for that at all. Cole, thanks so much, man. I'm going to have the link to the article that he just wrote because I really do think it was a great one. I think Nuggets fans in particular will really enjoy it. I'll have that in the description of the show, so be sure to set aside an hour and a half to read that. And but thanks so much for having me on. Anything you want to plug before you get out of here?
I'm actually going to give you guys one more name that I forgot to list for Nuggets fans. Josh Okogie. He just declared for the draft yesterday. 6'4 and a half, 7 foot wingspan, 210 pounds. I think he's pretty versatile. He's got really good horizontal lateral quickness, and it just comes down to the shot. But that guy, you could see plugging into a Nuggets lineup, playing the three. I think where the Nuggets are at 14, that's a little rich, but you noted the possibility of trading back. Yeah. That's a guy I'd look at. And another guy you'll really like is Kenrich Williams out of TCU. He's definitely a second round undrafted guy just because he's so old. He's already, I think, almost 24, 23 and a half. But really high. He reminds me of Joe Ingles. If he can shoot the ball. Yeah, exactly. So I figured you would be. So those guys are two guys to look at in the second round that I forgot to list.
Man, 6'4", though. I'm telling you. I'm on such a big kick right now about how small the Nuggets are, which is ridiculous because they have two 6'5 guys, and I still feel like they're too small. But so 6'4 just has me. I know the wingspan's there, and that's really what matters, but I don't know, man. It just makes me uncomfortable a little bit. But Cole, thanks so much. This has been fun. I think this is my like first draft pod, and I think for Nuggets fans, the next month now is where we turn our focus to the draft, and this was a really good start. So thank you so much.
Hey, Jamie.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.